It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Well, I've got a big, big show for you because the quarterly report's coming out in just a few minutes. So we've got Jim Dalrymple from loopinsight.com here. We've got Andy Yanaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. From Tidbits, we've got Adam Engst. They're going to talk about what to look for in Apple's quarterly earnings. Here's some surprising news about Apple and the Apple TV, VPN apps in China. It's a big Mac Break Weekly. It's coming up next. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 569, recorded Tuesday, August 1st, 2017. Pocket full of phones. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by LegalZoom. August is National Make-A-Will Month. Prepare for your family's future. Visit LegalZoom.com/prepare today for a free estate planning kit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And there's going to be some big news today, but after the show. So I thought, well, let's bring a panel together who could tell us what could predict what's going to happen with Apple. Starting with the beard, Jim Dalrymple is here from the Loop, loopinsight.com. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, Leo?
Nice to see you.
You too.
Your beard has been trimmed.
You know, it's summertime. It sheds a little.
But Are you cutting the sides now a little more? You're doing a little. You've got a new style.
I was sitting this morning doing this, so then you know that happens.
I like it. Andy Yanaka to your right. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. See, you don't understand the rural economy. There's times when you have to take the wool to market, and then there's the time you trade it for more hay and silage.
I feel like your sideburns mixed with Jim's beard would make a complete set. It's like
that's a whole person right there.
We're now attempting this through the video switcher.
It's a very Karl Marxian sort of thing. Like each beard according to his needs, each beard according to his capabilities. That's how we create our new revolution.
It's a complete set. And then meanwhile, Adam Engst from Tidbits. No, don't mix
totally
him in.
Nothing. Nothing.
He's the whitest guy in Mac technology.
Yeah, well, I've been getting that since high school.
That's good. Was your hair white in high school?
No. I also don't tan.
Yeah.
I got the worst tan on the track and cross country teams 3 years running in high school.
Yeah,
so,
I don't understand because you're outside all the time running. How do you...
And it doesn't make any difference. I mean, I do tan a little bit. I mean,
you can see a big floppy brim hat.
Look at my Apple Watch hand.
Yeah, there's
you know?
A little bit. Yeah,
it's a little bit. It's not as good as it gets. That's you know most weekdays at noon. So,
I don't know why I'm focused on personal appearance here. It doesn't matter.
Maybe because you're the one who's in a nice jacket and a tie and a business dress shirt, and you know you could lord it all over us poor freelancers that are just in our offices not seeing anybody all day.
Well, I'm going to a big event this evening. It's the release of Rob Reed's new book. And he's having a reading in the Hate today. And so I thought I'd wear a tie in honor of that. Rob Reed, founder, creator of Listen.com, which became Rhapsody. He's married to Morgan Webb of X-Play fame. But he also wrote a very good book a couple of years ago called Year Zero about the aliens and Napster. And turns out the aliens...
Wait, aliens and Napster?
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah, okay. Rob is great because he knows technology. So his books are really, really fun. So Year Zero, the premise was the aliens have been listening to stealing our music for years because they didn't have good music themselves, and now they owe the music industry.
Oh, yeah, I've read that. That's hilarious.
It's hysterical.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
It reminds me of that old remember the Voyager record that went out in yes. attached to Voyager.
Yeah,
so there was a joke that we finally got a response from the aliens that it consists of only five words repeated endlessly: send more Chuck Berry records.
We love that Berry guy. So his new book is even more timely. It's really good. It comes out today. It's on Audible. It's on Amazon. Actually, I have a little bit of it on. I'm in a little bit of the Audible book, just a tiny bit. It's called After On. And I haven't finished it yet, but John, who has, there's lots of twists and turns. It's about Flutter, which is an app. Oh, this sounds so science fiction-y. It's an app that knows who you are, who all your friends are, who all your connections are, knows where you are. So, for instance, if you and two of your office mates turn up at a bar at roughly the same time, Flutter knows you're having a meeting and will send you coupons for a particular drink that you might like. That could never happen here. And the funny thing is everybody hates Flutter, but they can't stop using it. It's addictive as hell. There's also artificial intelligence, the Uber of sex. It's really good. And,
We've had that for centuries, literally. It's just, we haven't had with cell phones.
We're creating new markets using technology. I have to say, I haven't finished it so far. I'm loving it. John, who has, couldn't stop talking about it. And I had to say no spoilers. So there's some real surprises apparently coming. And congratulations to Rob. He's a good friend of the network. And that's why I'm wearing a tie today, because we're going to go to his book reading tonight for his debut. Second, he says, I think I beat the sophomore slump, and I think he did. So Renee's not here. He's in New York. Not sure why. I thought at first he's not here because every time Apple announces its quarterly results, they do it. They send out an email half an hour before the end of the show, and then they wait till the show's over, and then they do it, the analyst call. And I thought maybe Renee just didn't want to be stuck on the microphone when he could be paying attention to Apple's quarterly results. This is traditionally Apple's down quarter, right?
Yeah, they got too much time between releases. Yeah. The usual previous years in which they've had a really good quarter, this time is when they had a really impressive Mac release in the spring. That obviously has not been happening for a couple of years now. So we're not expecting. I'm not expecting much. I have to admit that the analyst call is not something that I pay a lot of attention to myself. But I don't expect really great things for a call at this time.
The good news is Renee and Serenity Caldwell transcribe the call, so you don't even have to. But people will be watching with interest. MarketWatch and others have pointed out that we can expect, perhaps, or we can hope for some subtle indication of when the next iPhone will come out. Because, of course, if it comes out in September, it'll be part of the next quarter. If it comes out in October, and there have been rumors that it will not come out until later this time, then it would not be included in next quarter's results, and Apple would be expected to, in some subtle way, indicate that maybe next, in a forward-looking statement of some kind, that maybe next quarter will not be the traditional iPhone bump.
Yeah, and they could decide to play a little bit of gamesmanship. If rumors are true that they are going to come up with a much more expensive iPhone in the fall, they might decide which quarter do we want those higher profits to apply to, the earlier one or the later one.
It's always been bad because you get a few weeks of iPhone in the fourth quarter. Go ahead.
Yeah. They should have at least one surprise, since we know that it's got all the biometrics and we know what the shape is going to be like. They have to have one surprise left.
Right. Well, in fact, that's stuff we're learning from the HomePod, which is weird because that doesn't come out till December.
Yeah.
So first of all, a lot of this is coming from the HomePod firmware. How are people getting the HomePod firmware to begin with?
They released it by accident, according to reports. We just went out to the developer channels, and anybody who's smart, if you see something, you grab it before it can go away. And included in all that is all the helpful graphics that says, and here's how you set up your new iPhone with the new HomePod. And there's an outline that actually matches one of the rumored profiles we've seen before. We've seen rumors of a full screen that does go all the way top to bottom so aggressively that you need an actual little tab at the top in which to put sensors, like sensors in the camera, and so that's what we're looking at right now. I don't know if it was so much I'm sorry. I'm about to say something I shouldn't say, so I'm not going to say it.
And I know that Adam Engst, you don't report rumors in tidbits.
No, we don't. It's one of those things where all the rumor sites get closer and closer and closer to reality as we get closer to the announcement, and it just feels like more information in your head that isn't right.
Yeah.
You know, so we just avoid it until the actual release, and then focus on the details because that's something people can use. I mean, back in the day, it used to be more important to do rumor reporting because, first of all, there were many fewer of them, and people had to plan purchasing. That it was a really big deal to know like when something was going to come out so that you could say, okay, I'm only going to buy, or I'm buying Macs for my school, something like that. I need to know when this release is happening, or I need to know if this is going to be this right sort of thing for me. But the schedules, the cycles are so set now, for the most part, it doesn't feel useful to people on that. I mean, beyond the, yes, don't buy something right. Don't buy an iPhone right now. Really?
Well, we know
don't.
That.
Right.
But okay.
So I don't have to tell you anything about the iPhone 8 to say, don't buy an iPhone right
Adam,
now.
Put your hands over your ears and go, no, because we're going to talk a little bit. But this is more than rumors. For instance, in the firmware, by the way, Steve Stroughton Smith has been kind of the most forefront on this. He's the one who's done a lot of this analysis. But Avery Magnotti has posted on Twitter, the new HomePod UI sounds. And again, this comes from from that phony release. Do you want to hear these? Oh, come on. Why not? Let's hear it.
I don't mind hearing it. I just want to get a report on it.
Here's the alarm.
Sounds like crap in my mediocre $100 earphones.
Boy, if you only had a HomePod, you would love this sound. Okay. Is that all that we're going to get here? Alarm wave. Setup is fine. This is Lighthouse. I don't know what that means. Lighthouse might be, on the Echo, when you first set it up or it's got something to say, it does a little, the ring lights up. That might be the analogous.
Can somebody please make an iPhone like Pong game that uses these as the sound effects? That sounds like it's perfect for Pong.
Here's setup step target. Here's a timer. That's pretty. Your eggs are done. Your eggs are overdone. Your eggs are hard. Oh, screw it. Ooh, that's the audio passcode tone. Anyway, I don't know. You're right, Adam. That was worthless. That was a waste of your... That was 5 minutes you'll never get back. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's some iPhone face designs that are kind of intriguing. These are the images you were referring to, Andy. And if you look at these, there's a couple that look normal. And then there's one. Whoa, hold on there. Hold on. Show me that one again. There's one that has it's long and tall and has a little. This, unless Apple has decided that they want to use the Pixel 2 for their home hub, I think this is probably the new iPhone, right?
Yeah. It looks like they took part of the design cues off of, like, Batman's Tumblr, where it has those extended, like, forks in the front.
So this is kind of what others have been doing, right? The small bezel, but in order not to make it super wide, this is what the Galaxy S8 did. It's tall. It's an unusual aspect ratio, and that sort of implies that's what Apple's going to do. And there is this notch at the top, which could hold the front-facing camera. I think you.
Well, I mean, it has to. Not only that, but remember, it has to have the sensors to figure out: is the phone being pressed against someone's face or not? If they are putting in infrared sensors for 3D face scanning, that's where that would go as well. Also, the bottom doesn't. The screen goes all the way to the bottom edge of the bezel, there's not going to be a mechanical clicky button in there anymore.
Yeah. Steve says that the first one is probably a 5S. I mean, that's pretty old, yeah. And then this new face. So, anything else you guys think is worthy of talking about? We're learning a little bit about this next generation iPhone, I guess. I wish the Home Hub were out sooner. I'm more excited about that almost than the.
I get a chance to listen to it at WWDC, and it was really impressive.
I noticed that I am hardly ever using my Sonos speakers these days, not they are probably the better sounding than the speakers I've hooked up to my Amazon Dot, but the ability to speak to your, just ask for music by speaking is so great. Now, you're a musician, Jim, so you might have, you know, the quality is important to you.
Well, I think we've all gotten to the point now where quality and convenience are the most important things. And I think if you ask most people, convenience is the most important
thing. And there's good enough, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Good and enough. It, well,
that's proven by MP3s.
Right.
You know, I have a set of Futurisonics headphones, in-ear monitors that are about $1,000. And the sound on those is impeccable. It's just great. If I'm just going outside to take a 5-minute walk around the yard just to take a break, I may just put in my Apple AirPods because they're good enough.
And it's convenient.
Right. So when you look at the AirPod or HomePod, and it's convenient, but it also sounds really, really good. Right. So I heard it next to an Amazon Echo and Sonos, one of those, you know, Sonos Play 3 or
it was a Play 3. It wasn't the 5. It was the medium sized one.
Yeah. And there was just no comparison at all.
See, if it's better than the Play 3, that is good enough. That's pretty good.
It was noticeably better than either of those things.
Especially if it's sound shaping, which it's going to do, I guess, is...
Right.
Yeah.
So it was against a wall. So it was projecting a lot of the volume sideways and frontways, but it would send some in the back, but bounce it. And it knew that it was there. You know, so it would project the music where you are.
That's very cool.
And if you plug another one in, it automatically talks to the first one and then they become stereo. So if you are playing a song that separates channels in the music, then you get this feeling of depth. And depending on where you put them.
If you plug in four of them, do you get quadrophenia?
I could not get an answer to that. I told them that, you know, I wanted like six, but I could not get an answer to what happens if you plug in more than two.
But that's what Sonos did right. Sonos was smart because you buy one. Sonos's are expensive, but you maybe the lower the bar by saying, well, one sounds great. But what I found is I ended up buying, and then I bought another one and another one and another one. Pretty soon I had Sonos all over the house, and I kind of insensitive to the thousands of dollars I was ultimately spending. So Apple would be wise to do that, to have, you know, I know you could pair two for stereo, right, Jim?
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you set up a speaker and it's on a bookshelf and you decide you're going to have a party outside and you want to take one outside, it doesn't just project the audio one time, it's always sensing where it is. So if you unplug it, take it outside, and now it's out in the open, it will readjust itself to send volume 360 now. And then when you unplug it and take it back inside and put it back on the bookshelf, it will readjust itself again. So, you know, it's not like you set it up once and then you're kind of screwed if you decide to move it because you have to go through a process to set it up again. You don't. It's always looking to see where it is and where it's sending sound.
So I'm worried about Sonos, to be honest with you. They had said by early 2017 they would have Echo integration. In May, they said they were going to beta test it. It's still not around. And I think they may have missed the boat. As soon as the HomePod comes out, they've definitely missed the boat.
No, I don't think so.
No?
Because when you look at what Sonos does, and you look at what Apple is doing, Apple will not allow you with the HomePod to plug into your TV system, for example.
Interesting.
So there's no way to listen to, your DVR shows through a HomePod.
Right.
Maybe somebody will come up with, you know, something that
so
you can do.
So there's no aux jack? There's no auto?
No. This is a music, I would say a music and then... AI assistant, but I didn't get a chance to see any of the AI.
They'll have to improve Siri a lot, though, won't they, if they're going to...
Well, for some people, Siri works really well.
Well, The Rock.
When you've got an editor, it works really well. Yeah. The thing that I think Apple's doing a good job with focusing the HomePod on music and the audio quality, because I think that's what most people are doing most of the time with these so-called smart speakers. Yes. And we have a Google Home, for instance, and what we found was the only thing we ended up doing with it was playing music. Because every time we'd ask a question, it would get it wrong, or it'd say, it can't do that, or actually, you would just say, I don't have a question you can answer. I mean, I don't do bar trivia in my house, which is basically only kind of questions it can answer in a useful way. So, you know, it just ended up being a speaker, and then when I actually switched from Spotify to Apple Music, it stopped even being a speaker. So, it doesn't do anything now.
We have Echoes all over the house. We have Sonos all over the house, and I just noticed that once I hooked up the Echoes, the Dots, to some good speakers, I just never use the Sonos anymore because it's so much easier just to say, well, play this. I also can listen to audiobooks on the Echoes, which I can't on the Sonos. So it is a very natural interface to talk to your speakers, and Apple's smart to capitalize on that. And if that's all Siri does, but do we know, will it work with anything besides Apple Music?
Go ahead, Jim.
All right.
No, Andy, go.
I just realized that I was about to talk over someone who has actually been in a room with one, whereas I have not, perhaps. So far, the answer to the question that I've been getting, well, what if I'm not using it with an Apple product? It's like, well, you have an Apple product that works with AirPlay, and you'll just AirPlay to
That's not the solution, though, right? Because I can do that with Sonos as well, but that's not what I'm using.
But that's okay, because Apple's doing something very, very new. They're creating a brand new product that tries to mark out its own space, which is something that I think that they didn't do with Apple TV. With Apple TV, they said, you know, the Roku box, imagine one that doesn't work with anything that isn't an Apple service initially. They're basically saying, well, you know, the devices that you already know and you like, we're going to do one, but we're going to stake out the space of really, really awesome music. And it's an interesting spot to take, because they're saying, what if you only spent not that much more than an Echo, like the real one, but it was such a good speaker that it wouldn't just be good enough. You'd be amazed at how good it is. But they're also taking the space where, oh, well, imagine that your needs for music go beyond what you would pay $129 for a very, very good Google Home, or $180 for a very good Amazon Echo. But once you start, for people who are spending $350, but it will not consider, they will not consider, well, for $350, let's look at what we can get in conventional audio gear. Like, can I get a decent set of speakers that will plug into something that's already a good amp? How about something like the Audio Engine? Audio Engine makes some really nice little tiny Bluetooth USB analog speakers that will connect to anything that you want to connect them to. I've got them connected to my Apple TV in the bedroom, and you get that really wonderful, because they're two separate speakers and it's not a soundbar that's tacked to the screen, you really do get that room, that sense of space inside the room. The quality of the sound is amazing. So much so that it really made me wonder, do I have the right sound source hooked up? Because I can't believe these little dinky, what look like the Radio Shack speakers that I had when I was in college are putting out sound like this. And meanwhile, outside of it will, again, hook up with Bluetooth. It will hook up with USB. It has its own DSP, analog to digital converter. It will hook up with multiple analog inputs and switch among them. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think Apple is going to be very, very happy with the people who buy them, because who bought the HomePod because it's an Apple product. It works great with all my Apple products. I have great faith in what Apple does. And then how they build upon it in the second year and the third year, when they've already sold to the converted, and now they have to sell to people who really are comparing this to a Sonos and really are comparing this to that $129 Google product.
Speaking of Apple TV, go ahead, Jim.
And I have some Bluetooth speakers that I use. You know, if people come over and I just kind of set it up and we play music, it's a UE Boom. There's a couple of those, and nothing that I have listened to or used or heard so far sounds as good as that Apple speaker. Now, it's going to be a lot more expensive. There's no doubt about that. But if you're going for convenience and quality, I think that they have a really good product here. I mean, you could just walk into a room and say, you know, play some classic rock, and boom, it's going to start going. Or presumably, that's what we think will happen. Now, my big question is, what else is it going to be able to do? Are they going to go for the AI assistant, or the virtual assistant like Siri to be able to ask questions to, or, you know, things like that? Can you be doing something else and say, hey, set up a reminder for me?
So what do people? I'm thinking what I use the Echo for. I use it for a kitchen timer all the time, because there's one in the kitchen. I do shopping, but that's Amazon, so I don't know if Apple will have much to offer there besides creating a reminder list or a to-do list or a shopping list. But do people call Ubers from their Echoes? I mean, you can, but I don't think people do.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, you can, and of course, that's a Siri capability, but I'm just thinking what capabilities they would put in. I mean, they'd put the whole Siri in. But what would you use it for? I don't think answering questions. Google Home supposedly answers questions, right, Adam? But you don't. You get tired of asking it questions after
all. Right. You know, who won the Super Bowl in 1982 is only interesting to ask, you know, once a year or something. It's not a common thing comes up. But I do think that.
I left out the one thing, which is controlling the house, turning lights on.
Yes.
That is very useful if you've taken the time to integrate it. And presumably Apple could have some strategy that makes that really easy to do.
Well, yes, and HomePod is going to be a HomeKit hub.
Right.
So presumably there will be stuff along those lines. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think everyone has their set of 3 to 5 things they use Siri for regularly and reliably. And they may not even be the same for different people, but people don't use these assistants for a lot of different things. No. They're really pretty dumb when it comes to what they can do.
We're routinized. We learn what works and what works, and we use that over and over again. It trains us as much as anything else.
Well, I know. Right? If it fails, we never do that again.
That's right.
Right.
Precisely. That's why I do mostly timers. It's really good at timers.
And that's what I use the Apple Watch for. Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Know? Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem with these virtual assistants is, and I said this yesterday in a short post that I did, the problem that I have personally, when I try to use Siri for something and it doesn't work, and then it doesn't work again and again, then I just stop trying.
That's right.
Yeah. So after a while, and it doesn't matter if it's Siri or Google or Alexa or whatever it is, whatever assistant you're trying to use. And, you know, it was an article that Ben Beharin wrote about Siri's job. And what is Siri's job? Well, Siri's job isn't to do web searches and give you an answer. That's not what it does. Siri is supposed to help, set reminders and set up appointments and do stuff like that. But in early days of Siri, I tried to do all of that too, and it didn't work.
Right.
Siri may very well be much better at that now, but I've become so frustrated with trying to use it that I don't even use it anymore. So I could try to set up an appointment to come on the show today through Siri. You know, but I didn't. I went into Calendar and I just typed it out because it was quicker, it was easier, and I'm done.
It's very embarrassing. Every time I go to the dentist, one of the few places I make appointments, I'm standing at the counter, and every time I go, hey, I won't say it, you know who, hey, Shlomo, set an appointment for, and it never works. And it's very embarrassing because it always works when I'm not in front of somebody. So it's just, and I'm that guy.
And that's reminders work really well.
Right.
So you can say,
remind
hey, Shlomo,
me.
Remind me to go to the dentist.
I should do that.
You know, and that will work 100% of the time.
Oh, that's
you
good
may get some weird text, you know, if it mistakes what
but
you
it will
to
remind
to
me. Yeah.
But that always works. But yeah, the appointments, I don't try.
I can't.
I had one. Dave Mark this morning, who works at The Loop. Dave, very smart guy, much smarter than I am. Dave said, challenge me to start using Siri again and see how it worked, because he said it works for him just fine. So he said, say this and do the hey, girl.
Hey, Shlomo,
set a reminder at 9 a.m. to say hi to Dave. And it came up and set a reminder at 9 a.m. Xeon today.
But at least you remembered.
But right. at 9 a.m., a reminder would go off.
Right.
So I said, no, remove that. And I tried it again, but then I couldn't speak. I had to say, set a reminder to say hi to Dave at 9 a.m., you know? So, but you're not going to do that when you're out in public. I mean, I'll just say, fine, I'll just type it
That's,
in.
That is part of the problem is doing it in public. Go ahead, Andy.
These agents have a lot of the same problems as interacting with real people. Like one of my best friends, an interesting insight,
isn't it?
Oh, well, given how much trouble I have interacting with real people, I think that set me up very well for the relationship with technology. But it's one of my best friends, I didn't know this, he had spent like his entire college career plus a couple years being that installing high-end car stereos. And so when I just bought like a new stereo for my car and I was going to put it in, it's, oh, why don't I come over and I'll help you do that? I thought that, okay, well, I don't really need that kind of help. So then, oh, well, okay, maybe it'll be, then I thought, okay, it's fun to spend an hour or two in the garage with a friend. So he has come over and oh my God, he did the most amazing job installing this. And he was looking forward to doing it because he hadn't been able to, he was like, whereas I'm like the sort of person who just like duct tapes wires so they won't hire. He was like doing all kinds of tricks, popping out vents to run wires. So that, what I'm getting at is that you have no idea what Google Home can do because there's no way to look at an interface and look at a printed up menu of everything it can do. You have no idea that it can like change. You can say, hey, I'm running late. Can you rebook my Amtrak train for a later train? And then it can actually do it. I don't know if it can't actually do that, but that's the sort of thing that surfaces itself. When you're in someone else's house and you realize that they are doing things like making a change to an appointment on the fly as you say it, it's the sort of stuff that you have to keep playing with it before you realize that, oh, I didn't know that this can control my lights. Oh, I didn't know that it's also I can connect it to pretty much anything through if this then that. I didn't know that I have a Plex media server that controls all my media. I didn't know that that Alyosha can, I can say, please play this content on this device through Plex and it will actually happen. So that's where it falls short for a lot of people because it's designed to be no interface. No, just ask it what to do and it will do it. But you have to know what is possible for this thing to do. Once you sit through that first magic show, you really start to take advantage of it.
Okay.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, Google Home does give you that cheat sheet, and actually they'll email you regularly with things that you can say to Google Home. And I look at these things and I'm like, yep, don't need to say any of those things. So, you know, you have to see it actually being used for something you want. Yeah.
Well, that's The Rock versus Siri. That's why they made that movie. It was really...
Yeah.
As I didn't really realize it till last week on MacBreak Weekly when one of you guys said, the whole point of that is to show you five things you could do with Siri.
And they all do work, but not reliably, or not with the phone unlocked.
Yeah.
It's okay for you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that was my whole thing yesterday in reading Ben's article. Ben said that Google Home or Google's voice assistant will always be better at general questions, does this hockey game start or something, because that's what Google does, sir.
Right.
So it will always be better at that. So maybe it's not Siri. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm using Siri for the wrong things. And that could very well be. So when Dave said this morning, you know, I want you to try some things with Siri again and see how it works because it does work for me. I thought, okay, I'll do that because maybe I'm putting Siri at a disadvantage by asking it simple things that I just assume it will know. You know, when is the next Formula One race on? And Siri, you know, goes back to 1936 and gives me some answer. But Google can answer that for me. So maybe it's just the wrong thing. Maybe if I ask Google to set up an appointment, it would just explode.
Yeah. So there's two basic categories for all of these devices, right? There's the canned commands, you know, remind me to do this, set a timer, and that's just about processing the audio accurately. But then you get the non, you know, where basically the non-canned question, where you've got to be able to parse out the interesting content in there and then respond accurately. And all the companies are doing both, right? They want to make it as the canned ones as good as possible, and then have the non-canned responses be as accurate as possible. And the second one is the really, really hard one, but it's the holy grail, because if you do that well enough, you don't need to put any effort into the canned ones again.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Let's take a break. I want to talk a little bit about some surprises. Maybe we will have a Apple TV announcement this fall as well, and I'll tell you why we think that. But first, a word from ZipRecruiter, our sponsor today. If you're in the position of hiring at your company, the most important job, I will say this unequivocally, the people who hire your company are making your company. Your it's made of people, and the right people can take your company to the moon. The wrong people can drag it all the way down. And every single hire you make can go in either way, right? That's why you got to do it right. And, you know, if you've got an opening, I'm going to say this, and maybe your experience will back it up. There is the perfect person out there somewhere for that opening, somebody who's just going to knock it out of the park. But how do you get to that person? That person could be watching one job board, not another. They could be somewhere else in the country. How do you reach the maximum number of people to maximize your chances of getting the perfect employee? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter lets you post to 100 plus job boards, including social networks, with just one click. You post on ZipRecruiter, they post it everywhere. And within 24 hours, you're going to see qualified candidates rolling in. Now, they're not going to roll into your inbox or your phone. That's good, because you're going to get a lot of applicants. They're going to roll into the ZipRecruiter interface, which is designed for this. It allows you to do screening questions. It makes it easy to, they format the resumes in a unified way, so you can whip through this, screen out people who are just not going to make it, rank the rest, and hire the right person fast. 80% of jobs on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. You screen them, you rate them, you hire the right person in their easy-to-use dashboard. You can connect with a huge variety of professionals, all kinds, IT professionals, Mac experts, whatever it is you need. You need a graphics designer. Take your company to the next level today. More than 200 million applications delivered and millions of people hired. In fact, more than a million companies use ZipRecruiter today. And if you want to apply, by the way, you can apply there. ZipRecruiter will help you find your future job in any industry, technology, government, business, finance, whatever it is. Just upload your resume and apply with one click. Suddenly, you have access to those million companies who use ZipRecruiter. So it works both ways. It's amazing. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes, our small business, medium businesses, the biggest enterprises, to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. The right person's out there. Hire them fast. Hire her fast by posting jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. What? Yes. ZipRecruiter.com/twit for that free trial. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. If you're the hiring person, do it right with ZipRecruiter. Jim Dalrymple is here from The Loop, loopinsight.com. You're looking good. Did you lose some weight?
I did.
You look a little bit. You look fantastic.
You know, I wonder every week if you're going to call and say, come on the show. So I always try and look my best.
Damn, now you make me feel guilty. Can we get Jim week on more? I love having you on, Jim. It's always a thrill.
He's losing weight for you,
Leo. I get tanned.
You're looking great.
I fixed
great.
My beard up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Looking fantastic. Andy Iannocco looks exactly the same. But he looked perfect to begin with. He always looks good. No, it's great to have you, Andrew.
That's fine. All right.
I understand if I'm on a panel with Adam and Jim that you would.
No.
I don't look as good as them.
I love you, fine. Andy. I love you.
I mean, and
you know I love you and your moo cow.
It's just I spend so much darn time in my charity work assisting elderly and sickly shut-ins. I don't have time to do all the road races and all the exercise. But yeah, I'm sorry. I give too much. I don't think enough about myself. That's every job interview. People ask, what's your biggest weakness? It's always I give and I give and I give. And I just don't focus enough on a little person called Andy.
He does it for the kids. He's doing it for the
elderly shut-in kids.
The elderly shut-in kids.
A lot of Benjamin Buttons on my Meals for Wolves roof. It happens a lot more often than you think.
Actually, Andy's been doing great pictures lately of roller derby in Rhode Island. Just love the Providence roller derby. What is it? What's the name of that team?
Province Roller Derby. It's just Province Roller Derby.
That's a simple name, easy to remember. And is that Serenity?
No, that's not. But there's a lot of
Serenity.
She does a lot of jamming. There's a lot of pictures of Serenity. Yeah,
it's so much fun. Her roller derby name is R2D2Nator.
Yes, R2D2Nate. Yes,
R2D2Nate. Also here, Adam Engst, runner. And I didn't mention tidbits.com. He's the guy behind, he and Adam and Tanya are the people behind Tidbits, the world's longest running Macintosh news source since 1863.
Don't you forget it.
I knew the Mac was coming someday.
We've been
published the first issues in hot type.
That's how long ago it is. Someday there'll be PageMaker. Do you use InDesign or do you just type it up and put it on the...
I InDesign has no role in Tidbits, unfortunately, although I actually do use InDesign for other stuff, and I actually really like InDesign. It's one of those apps that, I don't know, it works for me. I think a lot of
Mac users aren't aware of it because they don't do page layout.
Yeah.
Everybody knew PageMaker because it was all new and the laser writer was new, yeah. And we all were doing, 500 fonts in our newsletter.
Well, and I was doing, I did a bunch of books for Peach Pit, and I did what's called packaging, where I would actually write the book into the layout in InDesign. And so I got really pretty good at InDesign because I was writing in it every day for several years. And then I stopped using it for quite a while. Just didn't have any, like, 3-4 versions. And then at some point I needed it again for Take Control stuff we were doing before we sold Take Control. And I had to... Yeah, I had to start using it again, and my fingers knew what to do. Suddenly, it's like I was option clicking and control, hitting command. Oh, like, I don't know where this is coming from. These keyboard shortcuts are like embedded in my spinal cord at this point. And I was so surprised to have them come back out at me.
Apple has a little bit of a problem. They're kind of dependent on Adobe between InDesign, Photoshop, Lightroom, Illustrator. I mean... We use Premiere, although I have to say that allowed us to move to Windows. and that's part of the problem for Apple. All of these are cross-platform, right?
Yeah. And, I think in some sense the world has changed with Creative Cloud because you don't have this big, ramp up to new PR all the time for the latest version of Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign and all that. And so we almost think about it less. I mean, it doesn't hit the media nearly as much as it used to, but Adobe's raking in $59.99 a month.
People who use it think about it, remember it.
Totally. Yeah. And those apps, it's interesting. I watched my son, who was used Chromebooks and whatnot in high school. And, he could not imagine why you'd want to use something more powerful than, Google Draw or whatever. Right, No, you don't understand. Photoshop is really, really more powerful. It's like this isn't even the same ballgame.
But what's kind of interesting is that Adobe's made noises and seems to be moving in the direction of putting at least Photoshop and Lightroom on the iPad in all their glory. Are they doing the same with InDesign?
I haven't heard anything about InDesign. I'd be surprised, honestly. It just doesn't feel like a good fit to me. Yeah. I mean, it's too text heavy.
Right. But
we'd be surprised though. Adobe's been doing amazing yeoman's work. They're even getting Photoshop on Chromebooks, for heaven's sake. Yeah. They want to make sure that anything with a web browser and a pulse, anything that's Y2K compliant, should be able to run Photoshop. And that is the most democratic and wonderful thing I can imagine.
Yeah. But I think it poses a little bit of a problem for Apple. If it's moving to iOS, I'm sure Apple's strongly encouraging that. But, it's one of the reasons people who used Macs for years and are looking for more pro products are switching to Windows because they can. If what you use is Adobe Creative Cloud.
It's not quite so easy. It's interesting. I've been doing an immersion in Windows 10 for the past like 3 or 4 weeks. Not switching to Windows. Not even considering switching to Windows. But now just to increase my proficiency in Windows 10 and make sure that I understand what that world is like. And so my away team is now a Windows 10 Ultrabook instead of my iPad Pro.
Interesting. And which one?
And so it is actually a 3-year-old version of the ThinkPad Carbon, the hardware. I adore this
very
hardware.
Nice. I've gone all ThinkPad. I don't. It's just so nice.
Yeah, and there is a lot of what you say that, well, I've got even Scrivener, my favorite word processor, there's a Windows version available to it.
Yep.
And because all my photo stuff is in Adobe Photo products, which I only switched to when Apple decided to terminate Aperture, which is a pro photo app that they absolutely loved. So there's so much, but then you get into, I really really need a version of Omni Outliner for Windows. Right. If I were to switch, I would need to find Omni Outliner for Windows. So these 2, 3, 4 tiny little apps, yep, that Apple either knows, or hopefully maybe they don't know how important all of these little independent developers are to retaining people into the macOS
I hope
ecosystem.
They know that. I do hope they know that.
Well, the quality of Omni Outliner is just impeccable.
Omni Group is vital at this point to Apple's continued success.
They were writing macOS 10 software before macOS 10 existed, because they were primarily Next Step developers. Yeah. And so I think that will hold. In addition, and then you add on the problems of, yeah, but how long is it going to take me to get used to Windows as a daily driver operating system? But nonetheless, that there are a lot of people for whom this is the recurring theme of the show, but good enough is not an idea that should be denigrated. If a designer of hardware or software or operating systems is trying to make, I'm going to make the greatest operating system in the world, and I can write so many different Wall Street Journal articles about how I can prove parametrically that this is the greatest speaker ever, and look at the charts of the ease of use and the amount of money to train people on this. But then there are people like, yeah, but I don't like this aspect of it, and I like the aspect of this on this other competitor's product, and the other competitor's product, it's good enough. I never operate this engine to redline. This is just a commuter vehicle, so to speak.
Maybe.
So I'm proud there's so much performance here, but I don't really access or need that performance.
Maybe Apple doesn't care. Maybe macOS, there's increasing evidence Apple doesn't care. Look at this. This is a company with Mac in its freaking name, Mac Fun. Right? They made for years some of the best little plugins for your photographers. They're making Luminar, their flagship product, for Windows. In fact, they're moving all the products to Windows. That should be scary. It's scary only if you really want to preserve the Mac, which I do. But that's a little, I think that Apple, I don't know, I hope Apple's supporting.
Well, you have to figure that Apple's ecosystem play is in integrating iOS and Mac and all sorts of other things, iCloud, iTunes. So,
but they're getting such success with the iPhone, Adam, that do they care about macOS?
Well, they do.
I think they do.
But I mean, keep in mind, macOS is mature. There's not a lot of places to go with it, and it's for the users, as we've been saying, it's about the apps.
Right.
The operating systems are really dull.
Less and less important. I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Operating system's not important. The platform or the ecosystem is what's important. And although Apple could be potentially losing some people because some apps are making it cross-platform, they do so many other things in the ecosystem to lock you into the Apple ecosystem, the ease of syncing, iCloud, yeah, iTunes, just all that integration goes a long way to keeping people on the Mac.
Yeah. I got a little sidetracked here. Mac Rumors reader Thomas Jackson posted this in their discussion forum on the Mac Rumors forum. His some of the movies that he had purchased on iTunes are now available in 4K and HDR. You can't download them in 4K or HDR. It just says it in iTunes. Maybe you can check your iTunes, folks, and see if some of your movies are suddenly 4K or HDR. Now, since you can't download them now, one has to assume that this is an indicator of something that's been rumored for a while, that there will be a 4K HDR Apple TV sometime soon. Yes?
Got to do something with it.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I think so. If only to make sure that the user interface elements are up to par with what you see built into the TV out of the box. 4K is actually not quite as important as HDR. I've been talking a lot more with people who have better TVs than I do and work in these industries. And they keep saying time and time again that their increase in resolution is irrelevant if you have non-Superman type eyes. However, if you have human eyes, you will appreciate the difference in contrast and tonality in HDR. So HDR is going to be, if you want to buy one feature or another, you want HDR. You don't necessarily care about 4K. But yeah, Apple, I do think the Apple TV needs a bump. They need some sort of differentiator, because right now all it's got going for it is, if you want intimacy with Apple services, that's the only box that will connect to Apple services. And given that the reason for that is because we're not allowing any other developers to create boxes that will connect to Apple services, that's not a real point of pride. I want this to be the best box that anyone can possibly make.
In February, Mark Gurman wrote a good article in Bloomberg Technology. Apple vowed to revolutionize television. Inside look at why it hasn't, and quote some statistics. Apple obviously doesn't share its statistics, but some analysts who are saying that Apple TV, well, actually, even Luca Maestri acknowledged it, that sales are decreasing for the Apple TV. eMarketer says that the market share has gone down to 11.9% in January. That was down from 12.5% in September. So it's dropping rapidly. And if you think about it, why would you buy an Apple TV these days? The only reason is if you're really into iTunes, and that's what you need. But there's so much competition out there.
Well, I use my Apple TV when I'm going to watch Netflix, when I'm going to listen to
But you don't
music,
have to, Jim.
But I don't have to, because even Comcast now has Netflix on its X1,
right.
You know, so you don't even need that anymore.
No.
What I think everybody is waiting for, including Apple, is to figure out what they're going to be able to do with both live and DVR. And, you know, a lot of the solutions that are out there now, and there are a lot of them now, are good, but they're not good enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes people
But this
like
is
Comcast
the era. This is the era of cord cutting. I mean, I think in the next 3 years, we're already seeing it. People are going to be cutting off the cable company and turning on over-the-top services, and they need a box to do that. If it's not built into the TV, they need a box to do that. So this is the opportunity.
Is that what Apple is ultimately going for? Are they waiting for that? I mean, they've said it's a hobby. Then they said the future of television is apps. And honestly, some of those apps, the television apps that they have on Apple TV, are really impressive. But to keep going in and out of apps, the little TV app that they made is okay, but unless your cable company is part of all of that and you can sign in, you know, that's not as useful as what it could be. So I'm waiting for that next big step where Apple comes in and says, okay, here it is. This is the ultimate in cord cutting right here.
It may be too late.
Well, I don't know if it'll be too late, because Apple tends to do things in a very cool way. And if you look at that little TV app that they have now, that is very cool if you have a subscription service that supports it.
Right.
So
it's not cool for me.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
look at these. This is the latest stats from eMarketer. These just came out. The 168 million people will watch a connected TV in the U.S. this year. That's almost everybody. Roku has 38.9% of the market. Chromecast, 36.9%. Fire TV, 35.8%. Apple TV, 21.8%. So it's falling behind rapidly. And I think that who cares about that as a product, but it impacts how much money is Apple spending to keep Apple Music relevant? How important is iTunes to Apple and its bottom line? I think very important.
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, Apple Music is one of those big services that they keep touting that services is going to increase over the next 3 or 4 years. A lot of that is coming from Apple Music. So they're willing to spend a lot of money to make sure that that continues to happen.
So put some of that money into the Apple TV.
Yeah.
Well, what we can't seem to figure out is what the strategy is for Apple TV. Yeah. And I don't know that Apple can figure out what the strategy is.
It's a hobby. That's all they've ever said. It's a hobby.
Well, they get rebuffed at every opportunity from the major cable networks.
Yeah, they hurt themselves by being so successful selling music, right?
Exactly.
They got all these great deals in the early days of iTunes because people went, Apple, so what? And then they became the number one retailer of music and completely dominant in the music industry and went, oh, crap. Television and movies are determined not to follow that path. Apple's too powerful. We're not going to let them gain any more power.
Right. Also, keep in mind that changes to net neutrality rules can absolutely change the game for cable companies.
Well, that's
now, if they have the ability to simply they can now simply say, we don't care what kind of box you have. We don't care how you get Netflix. We don't see Netflix as a competitor. Netflix is now a product that we can charge you extra for. So there's a lot of wait and see happening.
Wow.
I think one of the things that people are seeing Apple not doing with the Apple TV is extending it in some obvious ways. So, for instance, why isn't there a news app for the Apple TV? Apple could be filling that with its own content. I mean, just like it does with Beats One, it could be linking to other stuff. It could be doing a ton of stuff with that because news can be video as well as text. I mean, you're not going to read text on your TV, but you would watch little clips of things. There's lots of that on the internet to link to or to Apple could commission their own stuff. Similarly, you don't really see user – you don't have user profiles. So, an Apple TV is meant to be shared by everyone, but it's got all this personalized information. So in a family, that automatically makes it a little bit weird. And, it does a little bit with HomeKit. But not very much. If they're going to integrate, if you're going to have a HomeKit hub and be able to use Siri to control your HomeKit devices, why don't you have a home app where you can see how you've set all this stuff up and potentially be able to, adjust things from there as well? That they just seem to have dropped the ball, frankly. So it's not surprising to me that the sales are going down. Everyone else keeps moving ahead, even if they don't have all of the integration options that Apple does.
I think Apple would say to that, Adam, no, we're keeping our eye on the ball. The ball being iOS, and everything else is iPhone, iPad, and everything else is not even on the chart anymore.
I've said this before. Apple is a huge company that still thinks like a small company. They have one product and it's iOS.
Yep.
Everything else is an afterthought to Apple, and that's their problem. No matter how large they are, the entire company is devoted to the concept that iOS is everything, and it's very successful doing that. But that doesn't mean that that's the best strategy for all of these ancillary products, which could even do a better job of supporting iOS if Apple puts more effort into them.
So if all of us have been around long enough to understand what I'm going to say here, and probably the majority of the listeners too, if we take a point in time and Apple has done something, and then we look 3 to 5 years ahead and follow that along, then we can look back and say, oh, well, that's why they did that, 2 years ago or 3 years ago or 5 years ago, because they were working up to this feature or this set of features right here. And that's how far ahead these companies have to think. If we look back 3 to 5 years to Apple TV, it doesn't really seem to have moved. And that's part of the problem that I'm having. I can't see anything that they did, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that is leading to anything big that's going on right now.
Yeah, and you can see that in other places too. I mean, look at the iOS App Store. That all the very we've got. Developers can now respond to reviews. We got the in-app subscriptions. The amount of movement in the changes in the App Store. Very, very small since the very beginning. You have not seen movement there. They said it, and I won't say they forgot it, but they're certainly not – they're not doing paid upgrades. They're not doing demos. They're not doing all of these things that people have been asking for years and years and years and years.
I think you'll agree that in the past year since Schiller took over the App Store, there has been more positive changes – than what there has been in every year previous to that.
Yes, that's true.
So Phil really has made some remarkable changes to the App Store in a very short period of time. Now, I know that there's some obvious things to paid upgrades and things like that that are just a nightmare to try and figure out. And demos, I'm sure that there's nightmares there too. But with the amount of changes that have gone on in the App Store in the past year, I'm willing to bet that that's going to continue.
I mean, so what are the changes? We got the being able to reply to comments. So we've got reply. That's good. Reply is good. That's a real technology difficulty one.
Did Phil add the videos of the apps? The app videos?
Did he? You could have different screenshots.
Yeah.
The in-app subscriptions. That was the only real change.
The fact that it doesn't take 6 weeks to get an app approved now, they get it down to days.
That's different.
That's
huge. You know, but that's a different situation, right? I mean, that's just saying we had this policy and we've made it so that it doesn't suck as much as it used to, but its policy hasn't changed.
Well, in fact, we're going to get to that when we talk about Apple banning VPN in China. And that's a very interesting topic. Before we do that, though, Andy, you said an interesting thing, and I don't want to let it go, about net neutrality. And really what you're seeing here is the cable companies ultimately are not letting go of the pipe. Well, if it's not going to be, you know, HBO subscriptions, we're going to make it up as an internet service provider, and we're going to do everything we can with the FCC to make sure that we have an iron grip over all the content that's coming in through that pipe. Tom Wheeler did a interesting interview with Fast Company today about this. Tom Wheeler, former chairman of the FCC, who did, in fact, I think he came around. He was from the cable industry, but I think he came around due to the millions of comments a couple of years ago and chose Title II regulation of internet service providers to protect net neutrality. He says essentially that it seems to me the people who are championing rolling back those safeguards are the big ISPs, Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, and Charter, and their Republican supporters, and are not the people who have historically stood for a fast, fair, and open internet. He says this: everything that's happening, Ajit Pai is not listening to the comments because everything that's happening is really happening at the behest of the big internet service providers. That's kind of what you were saying, Andy, and I have to say, I think that's an important point.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Subscriptions are going down. The way that people actually experience entertainment is completely changed from the way it was when any of these people entered this industry, even if they only entered it in the 80s or the 90s. And they're not going to let go of an opportunity to say, well, if we can no longer be the company that charges you an arm and a leg for access to ESPN, and the way that we do that is by making you buy 500 channels you don't want as part of a sports package, then we will be the company that charges you an extra $30 a month to make sure that if you choose not to subscribe to the 500-channel package, if you want to stream ESPN at any kind of a quality, you're going to want to pay up through us. But I'm not smart enough about the internals at Apple to know whether Apple's being incredibly shrewd and intelligent by saying that these are shifting sands that we're trying to build a TV business on. Let us wait to see, like, where is the actual bedrock we can bound on? Let's wait for things to settle down for, or whether this is just in the category of, we like this market. We don't particularly care about this market. We don't really see this as something that is an opportunity for us to do the things that we love to do. So we are going to wait to see where the parking spots are. And then as soon as we see an open space, that's where we're going to go in. But we're not going to force our way into this. We're not going to try to define ourselves as the greatest solution for this, especially because, again, there's so much competition. The mantra of good enough, there are people that will just happily, they get a new Samsung TV or they get a new, even a bargain TV off of an Amazon sale. And does it have Hulu built in? Yes. Does it have Netflix built in? Yes. Okay. Why would I want to buy a box, even if the Apple box will be a lot more, I'll give you a lot more privacy, it will be a lot easier to use, and will provide more opportunities down the road that they can't even imagine right now. But again, they see a Netflix logo and they don't have to change from HDMI 1 to HDMI 3 to get to it. That's good enough for most people.
We're going to take a break, come back. There's lots more to talk about. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times, always a pleasure. Adam Engst from Tidbits. So good to have you. And, of course, from The Loop, it's Jim Dalrymple. I just want to read one last quote from this interview. Tom Wheeler, former chairman of the FCC, talking to Fast Company. It looks like the FCC is standing up for four companies. When you really get down to it, there are four companies who are really the major beneficiaries: Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, and Charter. They provide the vast majority of high-speed internet in the country. Four companies. There are 1,000 companies who are the early-stage innovators, the kind of folks who bring opportunity and create new jobs, who will have written a letter to the FCC. I did, saying their businesses will be threatened by the elimination of Title II in order to increase the power of the Big Four. This is just an absolutely startling comparison. Four companies are going to get bigger and more powerful at the expense of 1,000 startups and tens of millions of consumers. That is so out of whack as to be shameful. Bravo. We thought Tom Wheeler was an industry spokesman. No, he turned out to be a champion for a free and open internet. A good interview. Highly recommended. We'll take a break. Come back with more. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. August is here. August 1st. Can you believe it? What happened to the year? It's National Make-A-Will Month. Now, I've talked to you often about LegalZoom, how we used it to set up our LLC and our trademarks. It's great for business, but it's great for families, too. Time to take control of your family and its assets, preparing for your family's future. If you do one thing this summer, I'm sure you'll do many, but if you do one thing this summer, maybe it's time to get that estate planning kit. We got one. Lisa got one to do the whole thing. It's beautiful. You get this great kit. You can go to LegalZoom.com/prepare to get the kit free. You will get, by the way, with it, helpful information, but also LegalZoom discounts and everything you need to stop procrastinating and start preparing for your family's future. Even if you do nothing more, get this kit. It's designed to provide the tools you need all in one place. Whether it's a will or a trust, there are a variety of instruments you might want to use. You get special LegalZoom discounts. You'll get an estate plan checklist. There's an ebook. Lots of information. Now, remember, LegalZoom is not a law firm, and that's what's so great about LegalZoom. You know, they don't make $350, $450 an hour on you. That's why they can offer this free estate planning kit at LegalZoom.com/prepare. But they also, and I love this, there are times you need to ask a question. You need to talk to a lawyer. And they have created a network of attorneys, independent attorneys in all 50 states who will work with you at a flat rate. It's not by hour. Very affordable. This works so well for us. I want you to try it too. LegalZoom, National Will Month for August. LegalZoom.com/prepare. No obligation. No salesman will call. It's just a great resource to help you protect everything you care about during National Make-A-Will Month. LegalZoom has been around for more than a decade, helping families, helping businesses, and they're ready to help you. LegalZoom.com/prepare. Even if you've got a will, there are lots of things to think about. Things change. Maybe it's time to update it. LegalZoom.com/prepare. Get that for free today. We continue on with the Mac Break Weekly. What did I say I was going to talk about? Now, I forgot about it, but I thought it was important. Damn it. Remember I said I was going to talk about that later on? Oh, China.
Yeah.
So this is relevant to the App Store. And this is a problem, but I want to know what you think. I think this is a problem when you say, as Apple has, no, we are going to be the sole one and only source of apps on the iPhone and the iPad. We are going to vet all the apps. That's fine in the context it's been in, but now you're in China, and the laws of China are changing. They're going to change in Russia. In fact, they just changed in Russia. In February, VPNs will be illegal in China. They are already illegal in Russia. And now, because you're the one and only app store, Apple's in this position. They have removed all the VPN apps from the App Store in China, preparing for this new law in February. I think that they've been put in an awkward position. I think there is a solution for Apple, which is to open up apps, iPhone for sideloading. But maybe it's too late to do that. That would be such an obvious thing.
Yeah. No, I this is one area where I think that Apple has a moral obligation to... I'm sure that there were the discussions internal. I'm sure that they were really sweating this out. But the power of a government to control its people through its denying it access to VPN encryption and anonymity, it starts off with, isn't it kind of a nasty thing that the government is doing this? But also, it's when you're talking about a country like Russia where journalists get killed. Not they get harassed, not that, hey, they want to, there's an investigation going on, we'd like to have access to a phone. Journalists straight on get killed. And these people need to have the ability to speak privately with one another to avoid getting murdered by their own government. You have even worse governments in Turkey where, again, they will, it's not even, oh, well, gosh, this person was found hanged in a prison cell, or gosh, they were beaten by 18 different blunt instruments and we were going to rule this a suicide. In Turkey, you have journalists who are getting arrested and then killed. And you have political dissidents who are getting disappeared and killed. And Apple, I hope I'm not overstating this. I hope I'm not making this sound like hyperbole, but Apple has to decide what side of this argument they are on. If it doesn't matter if it means, I think that in China, it's unfortunate, but they're not noted for the same sort of stuff that's going on other places in the world. But they're just going to have to sit at some point. They're going to have to be face the press and say that, well, yes, we decided to not play along with this small government that doesn't have a whole lot of power over us, where it's not a big market. But we decided that when this huge opportunity of this huge market opened up for us, we don't want to risk losing access to that market. So I have deep problems with Apple agreeing to not to turn off what can be life-saving apps for a great number of people that have very, very little power in the countries in which they've chosen to live.
So I agree entirely with Andy in terms of the moral side, but from a practical standpoint, if this is the law of the land, do they have a choice?
But this is the slippery slope that you create by saying only through us can you get an app. Now, Apple, and this is the...
Precisely.
Yeah,
precisely.
This is they sent to one of the VPN apps. This is ExpressVPN. We're ready to notify your application will be removed from the China App Store because it includes content that is illegal in China. Once you're doing business in China... And by the way, it's not going to just be China. It will be Russia in November. Yeah. It will be Venezuela. Yeah, yeah. It will be Poland. It will be Turkey. Authoritarian regimes emerge all over the world, and Apple is going to have to agree to do what each one of these regimes says.
Yes, they will. And because it is the law of the land, Apple is not a government. It is not a military. It can't go in and say, we're going to just ignore the law of the land.
Google didn't either. Google left. They just left China. They left the market.
They can say that we're not going to participate. We're not going to have an app store in China then. Right. We are close to being valued as a $1 trillion company. China is a huge market. But let's talk about Russia. Let's talk about Turkey, where it's not maybe quite so...
Or do what Android does, where it's side-loading. They allow side-loading, and you could always do it.
I'm saying that they don't have the option of violating the law of the land, but they do have the free and open choice not to do business in a land that is making them do stuff that, if in their estimation, is going to lead to people getting killed, getting murdered. Again, for me, VPN is I'm in a coffee shop and I don't want my password being jacked by some kid. In other parts, it's you will be killed. If people know who you're talking about, the people that you're talking to will be killed. This is a serious problem. And Apple, at the very minimum, needs to speak about, let's walk us through why you decided that playing along with this as a broad principle is an okay choice. And is this compatible or incompatible with that hippie, touchy-feely, peace, love, dope? Oh, we're here to improve the world, improve things for humans everywhere. And again, if people are getting killed because of access to software or lack of access to software, they at least need to not be tone deaf and say, here is how we don't feel as though we are being hypocrites in saying this. I'm not saying they are being hypocrites right now, but I'm saying that at the scale at which they operate, they can't simply send notices to developers saying, oh, by the way, we're pulling your VPN apps. They have to speak at a very high level about what this problem is for them and how they intend to navigate it. Because what if the next thing that Russia does says, oh, by the way, we passed a law that says that you can't have a phone with any encryption on it, and we have to be able to have on the fly unannounced backdoors into it.
It's probably going to happen in Australia and England. I mean, that's just around the corner.
Yeah. Apple has to have a policy, and Apple has to state that policy.
So Google does not have a Play Store in China at all. Google doesn't play in China because, remember, Google was asked by the Chinese government to censor results of its search, and Google, instead of doing it, said, no, we're going to redirect all Google.cn searches to Hong Kong or Singapore, and we're just not going to do business in China. But if you have an Android phone in China, and many do, you can download from there are other stores, and you can download, for instance, a free browser from the not-for-profit group Great Fire that has a VPN built into it. There are alternatives in China, but it's a very difficult position that Apple's in.
It's terribly hard. But here's a question that I have also, which is that we're talking about apps in the App Store right now. But let's face it, Apple is tremendously reliant on China to build iPhones and iPads and Macs. And
it wouldn't necessarily just be leaving iPhone sales behind. It might be leaving iPhone manufacture behind.
Right. I mean, it seems to me that this is I agree entirely with Andy that this is Apple needs to be totally upfront about why they're doing what they're doing and what the situation is, because it is hugely problematic. But at the same time, they do not have an easy option. With sideloading, potentially, they could be, by allowing the sideloading, they could be breaking Chinese law.
I agree. May not remember, but in January, Apple removed the New York Times from its App Store in China.
Dangerous stuff, the great thing.
I agree the stuff isn't easy, but as parents teach their children, morality and ethics are what you do when the right answer is by far the hardest one.
Yeah, that's right. When it's easy, that's no big deal. Well, there you go. I don't know what the answer is.
And to balance things out and be fair, it's easy for Google to do what it did because it doesn't manufacture lots of stuff in China. As long as its ads get through where they're browsing, they still make their money. Yeah. Which is not to downplay the importance of the choice that they made, but again, it would be a very difficult thing for Apple to do. But once again, there's going to be a time at which it's going to seem really stupid that at no point has Tim or anybody posted a letter. If Apple can post a letter explaining why a bad antenna design is perfectly good, then they can definitely post a letter saying, here is our policy regarding how governments might try to control its people through an app store that we 100% control.
Apple and Android Google stores have pulled hundreds of scam financial apps from the store. These apps used primarily, I guess, in the UK. They're fraudulent online trading sites. And people are falling for it and have lost, according to this investigation by The Independent in the UK, quite a bit, millions of pounds to these apps. So here's an app called, for instance, Binary Uno. And she needed money because her pension wasn't big enough to live on. So she invested £200 of the company. They called themselves brokers. They said she was trading on the performance of gold and stocks. She ended up putting almost her entire life savings, £40,000, in and had a zero account balance 1 month later. Basically, they stole every penny from her.
Apple could pay that back.
Yeah, I think
they have that kind of money.
Well, the good news is they're removing these phony trading apps. Both Apple and Google are removing them from the.
This is a problem that in general, I obviously know much less about the Google Play App Store, the Google Play Store. But we've been researching word processors and various other apps for some tidbit stuff recently, and it is amazing the number of apps that are just crud. They're probably quote unquote legitimate apps, that they are probably what they say they are. But if you go search on word processors in the Mac App Store, for instance, you will find tens of word processors that you have never heard of from Chinese developers that all have exactly the same description. And they're clearly, I imagine they're open office clones ports. And I imagine that they're just basically doing shelf space stuffing where they can get these things in because they are nominally legitimate apps, but every one of them has a slightly different name, maybe has a different icon, and it's all the same stuff. And so it's just, the App Store, at least more on the little so on the Mac App Store side from what we were looking, but has gotten to be problematic if you even want to find something in it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true in the Android store, probably even more so. I'm kind of surprised, though, that Apple hasn't done a better job of curating its store, since it really does tightly control it, doesn't it?
You would think.
They're pretty good at using their editorial control to promote apps that go above the, hey, guess who just came back from a two-day weekend at a Ramada Inn that promised to teach me how to write an iOS app for only $48. But yeah, that's the most difficult thing. I think that's the part of the responsibility of people who are journalists and people who are writers and even people who are fans to make sure that the good stuff gets floated to the very, very top, because most people, I think that I shop for apps the same way that most people do, which is to just plug a few keywords into the search bar. And even when I know what I'm looking for, it's like Pokemon Go, and there'll be like a Chinese remote control TV app that knew that people are searching for Pokemon Go, and so it's going to try to...
It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's hard. We need humans.
We need humans. Earth needs humans.
Regretfully, we need humans.
Yeah. Here we go. Apple has, as we've reported many times, it happened last year, purchased Carpool Karaoke, a segment that appeared with James Corden on the Late Late Show, and they have produce 16 half hour. Now, the Carpool Karaoke on the James Corden show is short, but they've made half hour versions of this. I don't know how this will play, but they're gonna come out on August 8th, in 1 week, the first Carpool Karaoke, and we have a trailer. Would you like to see it? Let's play it.
On the road again.
So I'm going to rely on you hipsters to identify. That's Michael Strahan. I recognize him.
Well, I am at the very start.
There's Corden, and actually, that's interesting. They're not just doing musicians. They're doing celebrities. So wait a minute now. Okay, is that Will I Am in the back?
This is
app Planet of the App people, because that's Jessica Alba, Will I Am, and Gwyneth. So this is a little cross promotion then for the other show. Now, Michael Strahan, I recognize, footballer and host on GMA. Don't know who these two are. The guy on the left, I recognize. A woman in antlers. She's green. Girl on Alicia Keys. And then I don't know who that is. And
Metallica.
That's Metallica. Oh, yeah, there's James.
Metallica and Billy Eichner.
Who's this? Billy Eichner?
Bill Eichner. Okay. Bill Eichner, I'm sorry.
Yeah, of course I recognize
him. He shouts at people on the sidewalk, and it's very, very, very funny.
You rarely see Lars Ulrich in the backseat, but there he is. And I'm just going to presume that Kirk is behind Eichner. And, of course, they let James drive, and he should drive because he's a car fanatic. He's got a lot of cars. Now we're in a helicopter. And other famous people.
This is what I was worried about. And so the great thing about the Corden show is that
I like the conceit of the Corden show, which is it's all in a car.
It never leaves the only conceit is that they have to come up with some excuse of why they needed to carpool with
picking them all up.
Yeah. But they get rid of that in like 10 seconds, and it's the intimacy of two people alone in a car. There's no crew in there. They're all trailing behind other cars, and people letting their guard down because it's such an unexpected place to be. Our friend Robert Llewellyn, I think, was the first one to do this sort of thing. They did a show called it was just called Carpool, where it was an interview show.
I've been on that show. I love that show.
Me too. He literally gave me a ride from the airport in Gatwick to my hotel, and we did a show. Yeah. And what I was worried about is that it's going to be you know what I've never done before. I feel like I should get a sauna. Would you like to get a sauna spontaneously? Oh, look, there's a place to get a sauna. Like Jay Leno's Garage is a wonderful show because it's just him talking about cars on YouTube. When it becomes the CNBC show, becomes, you know what? Why don't we take this out for a ride? You
TV
know what?
Producers, I swear to God, they don't believe they don't trust the intelligence of the audience. They think, they'll get bored. Here we are in Billy Bob's, Texas, with a mechanical bull that's been changed into a dragon so that Arya Stark and Sansa Stark, I don't know the actors' names, can ride it. Oh, that's hilarity will ensue. Then we've got some sort of pedicab race, and they're in, you know, I don't, this is, you know, Apple's done such a bad job with Planet of the Apps. I fear for what is going to happen to Carpool Karaoke.
It could be good, but this doesn't get me excited about, about
now we're in a laundromat person. With a choir and the...
Oh, James Corden in the backseat. There you go.
Yeah. Corden makes some appearances, apparently.
Also, Corden is awesome. He's such a great host. So,
you know, but it looks like these are unhosted. So, for instance, we've got Sansa and Arya, and Arya's driving. So, it looks like these are unhosted somehow, which is not a good idea.
It's a self-hosting car show. That's where Apple's been doing this technology. Apple's car self-driving car technology has been so that these celebrities who are not used to driving themselves anywhere can operate this car safely.
Wow. I think I have to wash my hair.
Well, Apple, you know what? They got the money to hire some good people. They have hired some good people. Maybe they'll see the error of their ways. I don't know. Maybe it'll be great. You got to love Vic Gundotra, who worked at Microsoft, then went to Google and was, in fact, the interface on Google Apps to the iPhone team at Apple for many years, then was picked to run Google Plus, Google's nascent social network. Gundotra left. He currently is at a company that makes a very cool EKG device, Cardia. But apparently he just thinks that no one should use anything but an iPhone for photography. And he posted this view embarrassingly on Facebook. So this is basically, I think, Vic throwing shade at Google in more than one way. He says, forget Android, just get an iPhone 7. Look how great these pictures of my kids are in portrait mode. You don't need a DSLR anymore. And then it's fun to read the comments. The people who, you know, like Scoble say, yeah, you're absolutely right, Vic. And then the people point out, you know, the Pixel probably is a better camera. And by the way, how you're going to, the iPhone is number 12 in the DxOMark ratings. How are you, there's plenty of reasons. And then somebody's pointing out, well, see the smudge in the hair with the portrait mode? That looks terrible. And on and
Pixel
on.
Peepers.
Pixel peepers. You Pixel peepers, you. Yeah. I think Vic's prematurely saying it's the end of the DSLR, but is he right about Android photography?
No, that's just dumb. I disagree with that 100%. Apple, I still think that the iPhone is the best camera simply because, and I need to point out that I will go out often with four or five different cameras because I'm testing out different things, and I use the iPhone 7 or the 7 Plus sort of as in the mix as part of the things to compare to. And by far the phone that gives me the least amount of trouble where I have the decision to make to take a picture, I lift up the phone, I press a button, and a split second later I have a picture. No other phone does a better job of that than the iPhone, and that's when because it takes such consistently good results, I think that it is the best camera. However, this is timely because a couple of weeks ago I did an experiment. I once again took out a pocket full of phones, including the Asus Zenfone that costs all of like the costs like a pittance of money. The new Samsung Galaxy S8, another phone. Plus, I had the iPhone, the latest iPhone. Plus, I had my Panasonic Lumix LX10, which is a very, very nice like pocket phone. It's not a pocket camera. It's not like a cheap blister pack you get at the drugstore. It's a very, very, it costs about as much as a phone. And so I was doing my usual walk around Boston, taking the same tourist photos with all the six cameras in my pocket. And things are automatically uploading to Google Photos. And I realized there was an opportunity here because all the stuff was automatically being uploaded and it was the exact same picture, the exact same framing. The only rules I set for myself is that I can use Zoom, but all other choices have to be done by the camera. It has completely automatic. So I can't, I wish this were brighter. I wish this were just directly uploaded. And so I realized that now that this is all in Google Photos, I don't know which camera took which picture. So I decided to go ahead and say, I'm just going to choose the one I like best of each of these sequences, put them into a separate album. And then once the album is complete, I will then look to see which camera took which one. And I was expecting A mix of things. I was certainly expecting the Galaxy S8 to do really, really well. I was expecting it maybe to do a little bit better than the iPhone because it came out later than the iPhone. The iPhone is last year's technology. The S8 is the later technology. Almost every one of them was taken with my daily carry phone, the 2015 Nexus 6P.
Wow.
Almost all
not
of them.
Not even the latest Android phone.
Not even the latest one. And almost all of them. Because the other detail I omitted is that the other rule is that whatever the default camera app comes pre-installed on that phone, that's the app that I'm going to use. So no, I can't use like a raw Lightroom photo. Then that's unfair. And almost all of those pictures, the camera decided to use the Google camera app's HDR Plus mode, which is the most lifelike and the most powerful HDR app I have ever used on any phone. Now, you can tell because sometimes it will take a few seconds for it to finish building this picture, and there are times where I'll be taking like bursts of photos, and then I'll wonder, why is the phone in my pocket so warm? It's because it's still processing all these pictures. But it goes to show the intelligence from this isn't that, oh, well, the iPhone is no longer the best phone. It's that it really doesn't matter what the lens is like and what the sensor is like, and even to a lesser extent what the image processing is like. If you have synthetic if you have synthetic processing that will be able to take whatever the hardware can do and fake a better lens out of it, that's probably more important than whatever is built into the camera. I was not expecting that. I was not leading myself towards any conclusion, and I'm shocked as hell, but that there it is. I'm pleased to say that the phone that I paid $380 for at a discount at a Black Friday sale happens to be my favorite camera phone because it's going to save me $700.
You see, being a non-photographer, which I am, I suck at photography. I'll sit down and play music all day, but photography is not my thing. Literally, that saying, the best camera is the one that you have with you, is great for me.
That's true. But that's true. Yeah,
because
that is true.
I have my iPhone. It doesn't matter how good that camera is. It's going to come out blurry when I shoot it. And it's not going to look good, but it's mine. It's something I have, you know, of whatever.
Also known as the Heineken filter.
Yes. Well, the fact that I can't see the screen anymore because I need glasses, that doesn't help. Yeah. So I can't tell if it's blurry or not.
Well, let me put this in a way. Would you... It's true. The best guitar you have is the one you have as well. But if you could strum a Fender Stratocaster or your iPhone.
Well, I wouldn't use. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a great. I wouldn't do that on my iPhone.
Right.
But
I'm just going to put this in terms you'd understand. There's a lot of pictures you wouldn't take on an iPhone either.
Well, see, I don't have another camera. So that right, is yeah. the camera that I will.
Yeah. But do you ever notice like you'd want to zoom? Like, you're not going to take it on your African safari and take a picture of a lion that's this big.
No, very cute little lion.
Cute little lion out there. Oh, tiny little lion. So there's some things you can't. I don't know why Vic posted that. It almost feels like he's just throwing shade at Google because he used to work there and now he doesn't like them anymore. But especially posting on Facebook.
Yeah, that's a little bit obvious. But yeah, I mean the purpose of a camera is to take a picture of the thing that you want to take a picture of.
And sometimes the iPhone is the perfect camera. And so,
well, that comes back to that's why I think the iPhone is if I have to say which one is the best, that's why I say the iPhone is the best. Right. I could take better pictures with my Olympus OMD EM1, a camera that I'm absolutely in love with. But if it were, I have to admit that if I happen to bump into George Lucas at like an airport. Yeah. And I've got a 5-second opportunity
to get a
picture of me with
George. There's nothing like better than the iPhone.
Not only that, but my LX10 will absolutely kicks the iPhone's butt, obviously.
Yeah.
But
that's the Panasonic LX10, which is a very nice
The Panasonic LX10. Yeah. But the thing is, the iPhone is optimized towards, we will get you a decent, recognizable picture of you with George Lucas. You will not have to, like, call a friend of a friend of a friend, see if Alex knows anybody at Skywalker Ranch that can say, hi, I tried to fancy pants it with this $800 pocket camera and I forgot I had it on the wrong mode.
Oh,
so it didn't actually focus.
I've totally done that.
Can we meet at the airport again to get this picture again?
I've totally
so that's,
done that.
That's what most people are want out of a camera. They don't necessarily want the best picture they can get. They want a decent picture, and the iPhone will always deliver that.
This camera phone, in not just the iPhone, but camera phones in general, have killed the point-and-shoot market, probably. I mean,
This for most people, this is the camera they have, is their phone in their pocket, and it's plenty good enough. So yeah. I agree with that, but I wouldn't agree with the anybody saying throw away your DSLR because now you've got an iPhone. Although I think part of the strength is dual lenses. Now Google is rumored to be doing dual lenses. I think almost cameras in future will have dual lenses. That's one way to solve the zooming issue and also improve the. I think what Vic was really saying is the power of, and we all agree on this, the power of computational photography.
Yes. Yeah,
that's which pretty is, amazing.
Which is what I got out of that Google Photos experience.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean it's it also the thing that really got me to stop even publishing reviews that try to do a side by side is to remember that if you were to take any photo that your mom and dad took, I mean people who are 10 years younger than me, that their mom and dad took on film, any phone camera, even like the most middling range phone camera, will take a picture kicks the butt of that little cartridge 110 system.
Remember we had the Instamatics with the flash cubes, and then you wouldn't get the picture. You wouldn't even know how the picture came out until a week later because you had to go to the one-hour photo and drop it off, and then you'd get prints, and the prints would be terrible. You'd throw away half of them. I mean, we've come a long way, baby. Nobody's denying that. Yeah.
So my parents, in fact, I forget the camera we had, but it was one of those things where you'd take holiday photos, Halloween pictures, things like that, but you didn't use up the roll. So you had to, in fact, wait until you'd used up the roll to get them.
In September, you'd get pictures from last October. Yeah.
Yeah, well, remember that costume? That was great.
That was great.
Yeah, no, we've come so far.
Yeah.
It is magic.
I do want to give my parents some credit for being pretty decent photographers. Don't show this yet. I have to log in. But they had slide. They used slide film, and we recently digitized all of the pictures, and they actually came out quite well. I'm not going to share I got an email from somebody a couple of days ago saying, why are you always talking about your vacations? Stop talking about your vacations. Stop showing your photos. Okay, fine. I don't want to bore anybody. Let's talk about Foxconn. Let's talk about the president's Twitter. So remember, President Trump last week said Apple's going to build 3 bigly beautiful factories in the United States. Apple went, huh? Maybe they are, but some speculation is that maybe what the president was thinking of is Foxconn, who makes the iPhones. Actually, Foxconn's factory in Wisconsin. They admitted they said, yes, we're building a multi-billion dollar factory in Wisconsin. Oh, yeah, this is Trump's tweet. Tim Cook didn't promise anything. anyway, Foxconn's going to make it for sharp TVs, not for iPhones. But anyway, let's dig a little deeper, because apparently Wisconsin is giving Foxconn a $3 billion tax break, enough to buy everybody in Wisconsin an iPhone. And so really the only person getting rich from this, according to Bloomberg Businessweek, is Foxconn and its billionaire chairman, Terry Gao. And if you do look at the numbers, which they do in this article, it seems like a pretty good deal for Foxconn, maybe less of a good deal for the people of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Also, Foxconn has a track record of making these amounts. So that we're building these plants, and like they did this in Brazil, they've done this other places in the United States. And 3 or 4 years later, the tax credits came immediately.
Yeah.
But the actual jobs, they're still working on those, and it's still not actually happening.
Yeah.
So any news about how Foxconn is doing anything in the United States or in the Americas, it's like, okay, it's a nicely typed press release. I like your choice of font.
Foxconn, Hon Hai, the parent company of Foxconn, says it's going to spend $10 billion on the plant in Wisconsin. They've never spent anything like that over the last. It's spent less than $9.5 billion over the past 5 years on capital expenditures. So it's not. It seems like that would be a lot of money for them.
A lot.
But $3 billion tax credit. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that's bingo.
Attempts negotiations.
Yeah. Did you see, we've talked before, Apple's been dissed for its anemic GPUs and some of its high-end devices, but maybe there's a solution on the way. NVIDIA has announced Quadro and Titan external GPU solutions, almost designed for MacBooks with Thunderbolt 3. You connect these up to your laptop It's actually bigger than your laptop. And you have suddenly a very, very powerful graphics processor. So it's interesting. I think it's not really just Apple. I think a lot of laptops would benefit from this. It's funny, though, that these graphics professionals want to use laptops.
They want to use the machines they want to use. Right. And it also gives them some portability, and also it allows them to have the portability and be able to swap out cards wherever they want. Gaming is also a big deal where, yep, again, you don't want to have to spend $5,000 on a laptop and then have to buy another $5,000 laptop 2 years later because you need that extra nanosecond in order to not get killed.
Plus all the heat is outside of the laptop. Or if you're using an iMac and with Thunderbolt 3, this would be a great choice for an iMac, for
instance. Power. Yeah. The great takeaway from this is that people think that that USB-C is, it's a different type of connector for USB. It isn't. It's USB. If it's actual USB-C built to the spec that Intel has put together, not just this cheap little knockoff that appears on some cut RAID Windows notebooks, it really is like a totally new bus standard that has really no limits as to what kind of an accessory you can plug into a notebook. It makes notebooks gives notebooks almost the same amount of credibility that any desktop Mac or PC would have, because if I can get the RAID array that gives the bandwidth that I need, if I can get graphics coprocessors that RAID that I need, if I can get five monitors hooked up to it, why am I necessarily sweating about the fact that this box that I want to buy has no slots? Why don't I buy a really good notebook that can also be taken with me on jobs?
And let's end with on a happy note, shall we? Apple is teaming up with the Australian company Cochlear. They do cochlear implants, which are really miracles. I know a couple people have had them. Maybe you saw the video on YouTube of a young girl, congenitally deaf, had never heard her mother's voice, given a cochlear implant, which is basically something that replaces the cochlea in your ear. Obviously, only certain kinds of deafness are treatable this way. Attaches the implant to a computer on your hip and a microphone, and suddenly you can hear for the first time. And remember that YouTube video? It was just amazingly moving to see this young girl hearing her mother's voice for the first time. Vint Cerf talks about his wife, Annie, who was deaf from birth, who has a cochlear implant, and what a change it made for her. So Cochlear is going to make a processor now that will work with the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod Touch. So I don't know if this replaces the iPhone, or the processor in the cochlear implant, or if it just makes the iPhone part of it.
My understanding is that it does use the iPhone as for a lot of the processing.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so basically gives you essentially upgrades and no lock-in for this one device.
That's fantastic. I use my iPhone with my hearing aids because they're made for iPhone. And it's really great because you can actually make calls and hear the sound in your hearing aids. You can listen to books or music that way. It's not full fidelity. It's a hearing aid. But hearing aids made for the iPhone with iPhone's assistive technologies work really, really well. It's a really nice solution.
See, this is what I find so impressive about Apple overall. It's not just things that, we've got this new feature for all of these people, and it's a cool little thing that they work on. I really believe that Apple cares about
users. I think you're right.
And I really like that.
I think I really the medical uses of the Apple Watch are another very, very good example of Apple.
Yeah.
Because these are small businesses, they're probably not a huge number of people from Apple's point of view, but it makes a difference in people's lives.
Yes. And I respect that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, we knock Apple sometimes, but I particularly knock Apple sometimes, but that is something they should be very much praised for. Let's take a break, come back. We'll get a heavy metal pick of the week. And... you probably recognize Metallica right away.
I did.
And a lot more coming up. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage. If you're buying a new home, if you're refinancing your old home, yeah, sure, you could go back to the 19th century, do it the way we used to do it a couple of years ago. Go to a bank, hat in hand, ask a loan officer, please, sir, can I have some money? Present them with bankers' boxes full of paperwork. I actually was faxing. Yes, I had to find a fax machine. Faxing them documents. on our last time we did this, we went to a big bank, and it took them 3 months. Now you can do it in minutes from your phone or your tablet or your computer without touching paper, without meeting anybody. You could do it all with Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage comes to us from Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country, and you can just see all those J.D. Power customer set. Number one in customer satisfaction year after year after year. That kind of proves the point. They really are beloved by their customers, both in mortgage origination and servicing. And they love us because they created something just for the geeks, an online mortgage approval process, which gives you, by the way, more than just fast. It's transparent. You know exactly what's going on. You can understand all the details. You can control it, too. You get to choose the term and the rate. And you submit all, because of they have trusted partners in all the financial institutions, you submit all the financial information they need from the app. No faxing, no searching through the attic. And because it's all online, all through the computer, based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the options in minutes and find the one that's right for you. You'll literally get approved in minutes, not months. At Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. And all you have to do to get started is go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. They're an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Quicken Loans, a product just for you and me, the geek. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Break. Mr. D, Jim Dalrymple, loopinsight.com. He's a rock and roll maven.
I am ready for you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so every time I come on, I do not really a metal and not a rock one, but in between, hard rock.
Hard rock. Sorry, yeah, I'm not up on the terminology of the kids.
No, I want to make sure that I get something, a little something for everybody in here. So, this week's pick.
Yes.
I've been saving this one, too.
Ooh.
For you.
For us? Ooh.
Yep. Texas Hippie Coalition.
When you say you were saving it, did you have it in your beard this whole time? Texas Hippie Coalition.
So anybody that...
It's got a great name.
That likes any of the other choices that I've given them over the times that I've been on the show will love Texas Hippie Coalition.
Your picks have been absolutely right on every time. So is it kind of country rock?
No, it's bluesy, bluesy type hard rock. And the guy's voice, the guy that sings, his voice is just, it's raspy and it's you know, really strong.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. He looks like Charlie's Daniels, but he... Let's hear how he sings.
Look at that guy.
I love it.
There you go.
Yeah. This is awesome. Oh, I love his voice. If you didn't see the video, you would be so shocked to see what they look like. That's awesome.
I don't think anybody's going to argue with him that this is real rock.
No, this is real rock.
I think they're going to.
Texas Hippie Coalition.
Yeah.
That's on YouTube, Apple Music, everywhere you want to be. Thank you, Jim Dal. Jim, do you have any recordings we can listen to the Dalrymple collection or anything?
I have hundreds of recordings in my iTunes library that I did over the years.
Are you going to release those? You got to do a best of album or something.
Best of the Beard.
Maybe someday.
Oh, I'd love that. Best of the Beard. I like it, Adam Engst. From tidbits.com, your pick of the week, my friend.
Man, I feel like I'm just going completely in the opposite direction here. This software comes from a Swiss company. So I just somehow can't quite.
Oh, the Swiss rock. Come on.
Yeah, no, not like that. They don't. So Trip Mode 2. Trip Mode 2. It's a wonderful little app. Second version's been, you know, it's new, but what this thing does is it lets you control by the network that you are attached to what different network-enabled apps can operate at all.
Oh.
So, for instance, and I was on a trip very shortly after this came out, and the hotel Wi-Fi was totally shot, and I had to use my iPhone for tethering. Totally fine, but when you hook a Mac up to an iPhone for tethering, you got to watch the data, because Dropbox or CrashPlan or those iCloud, those kinds of things, iCloud Photo Library, they can just eat your data for lunch. I mean, it can go really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And so what Trip Mode 2 does is when it sees a new network, it says, what do you want to use on this network? And everything, you have to approve everything specifically as it asks for permission. Dropbox says, hey, I'd like, you know, I want to start syncing something. Trip Mode puts up, you know, let's say you want to allow Dropbox. And so you get to control that. And then it remembers for each network. So if you periodically switch between networks of different bandwidth capabilities, you can say, okay, I am allowing Dropbox on this one, but I'm not allowing Dropbox on this other one, or CrashPlan just isn't necessary at this point, you know, whenever I'm connected to this network. So it's a brilliant little app. I honestly don't remember the first sort of what's changed often enough. I have to look back at the PR and whatnot. But for anyone who travels, and particularly anyone who tethers to an iPhone, it is an absolutely essential little thing to avoid running through your data cap.
It is not available on the Mac App Store because it uses a kernel extension. That's not allowed. Yeah. Is it on the iPhone App Store?
No. It's a Mac
only.
So
you have to put it on the Macintosh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And basically, I mean, I used to do this also. A couple of years ago, I had to drop my son off at cross-country practice, and it didn't make sense to drive home, so I had to sit in the car and work on the school's network.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was a useful thing there, too, because that network didn't have a lot of bandwidth, and I was, you know, on a laptop. I just didn't want anything else going on while I was working. So, you know, I got all these little custom network configurations, and it just does it automatically. So, you know, I don't know if you remember Location Manager back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's right.
Yep.
I forgot sort of about location. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the important stuff of Location Manager. Yeah. It's the additive things. But this is what you really care about, because it costs you money in the end.
Right. Well, this doesn't cost much. $8 on the Macintosh.
One data overage is it's paid for.
Yeah. And they have a bundle if you want to get it on your Mac and your PC. You can.
And it comes in SetApp for anyone who subscribes to SetApp, which is the $10 a month, and you get access to like 70, 80 apps.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is this worth doing?
I talked about SetApp back in January when they were just beta testing it. SetApp is an interesting situation. They curate very heavily, so the apps in there are really good apps, which is what you want. I mean, that's great. The only issue is not quite clear. I just did an article about it. I don't know. Three, 4 weeks ago, it's not quite clear if it's being lucrative enough for the developers because it's one of those chicken and egg things. And they need to get enough people, and it's.
But what happens? So Trip Mode will always be in that folder. I mean, it doesn't go away.
When you subscribe to SetApp,
you have to keep paying SetApp every month for all 81 apps to work, but they don't change out apps.
No.
Okay.
In theory, the apps have all committed to be there. I guess it's a year at least, but realistically, no one's going to take something out because if nothing else, they're not losing money, right? They may not be making as much. But what I've talked to the developers who are in there, they basically say they're not making as much as they would like, but they think that it's just still early days. I mean, it's only been out for 5 months.
This has a pretty good – I do remember you talking about this last time you were on, but this is a pretty good set of apps in here for – what? How much? $6 a month?
$9.99.
$10 a month. So if you saw three or four apps in there that you wanted, this would be worth it.
Yeah. So and there's some stuff. I mean, Ulysses is there.
Yeah.
Eon Timeline, Merlin Project Express. I really like iStat Menus. So
I love iStat Menus. Yeah.
Precisely. And this is and what I found actually, which is kind of funny, is that there's all these times when I'll be at a conference or something like that, and someone will have this problem, and I'm like, well, I know how to solve it, and there's an app in SetApp that will do it. So some guy wanted to do a YouTube clip, which he needed to download and convert to a movie so that he could put it into Keynote because it wasn't working for some reason as a YouTube clip. And I was like, yeah, Downey will do that. So I, you know, basically launched SetApp, downloaded the app. You know, he gave me his thing. I gave him a movie file back. He popped it in Keynote, and he was super happy. So, you know, saved his bacon, you know.
And you didn't have to pay anything because you already owned
precisely.
That app. Yeah.
I mean, I would never have gone out and bought an app to do that one thing, but I was going to download Downey once and use it right then and there for that feature.
I hope they do well. This is a very interesting idea.
They're a good company, the MacPaw folks. They're Ukrainian, and they're solid. They're thinking hard. They've been improving it, and they're really being very careful about what they take. So, you know, this is not Mac App Store.
I really like them.
So you can either buy Trip Mode standalone for $8, or if you are a SetApp user, you can try it out for free because of your SetApp subscription. Andy Anatko's pick of the week.
This is a free VNC app called RealVNC. You know what VNC is. It's the ability to remote access one computer from another device, made 10 times more awesome in modern ages because now you can remote access a Mac from a phone. I can remote access a Mac or Windows machine from a $25 Raspberry Pi. And you just install this app on whatever machine you want to control. You can then download a client app that lets you again access that device from wherever you want to go. And because there is a sort of like a central, if you set up an account on RealVNC and it will be able to communicate to a central server, here is what the IP address of this particular Mac is on the internet right now, because your ISP will keep changing the IP addresses. So it means that you can be in a hotel room and decide that, oh, wow, taking just my iPad mini was such a bad idea because I can't do the work I need to do with just my iPad apps. And so you can just simply, through the crappy hotel internet, connect back to your iMac, run an app in a full screen mode, and just simply have everything that you need to do over there. It's even useful if you just want that little belt and suspenders problem of, I think I've taken all the files that I need for this trip. I think I've got all the files in my Dropbox, but you forgot one thing, so you can go back. So I can go back to your Windows machine or your Mac machine, copy that into Dropbox. You got it good. It's also neat because there's so many places in the house, if you have a larger family, where you feel like it would be nice to have an iMac in the TV room in addition to the bedroom in the office, but you don't want to go out and spend $5,000 to $2,000 on another Mac. But you know what? You do. Again, you can afford $25 or $30 for a Raspberry Pi, or maybe you have an old laptop kicking around from ages ago. And so you don't have to be able to run the full power of that Mac app. You can just run this little, very, very sophisticated little client app that will let you have full keyboard and mouse control. Really, there is a little bit of latency. You can sometimes tell that you're watching a video stream as opposed to a live UI being backed by hardware graphical acceleration. Yes, but after about the first 5 minutes, you don't really notice that it's just a Mac, or it's just a Windows machine, or it's just a Raspberry Pi. And it's free. They will start charging you if you want the more professional features. It's free for personal and home use, which means that it's missing some of the features that they would want to charge you $40 a year or more for. Things like being able to do multi-factor authentication, things like being able to just drag files from one place to another, access a remote printer, stuff that really isn't that important for people who, once again, they just want to be able to run Mac apps on their iPad, for instance, or they just want to be able to be in bed and they don't feel like getting out of bed, but the only computer they have with them right now is the company-issued Windows machine, but they want to run their Mac apps from the computer that's in their home office. It's worth it. I will caution that even though it is free, it's not worth putting it on every machine that you might conceivably want to remote access, because it does introduce a security hole just by definition. It's enabling remote access to a machine. Doesn't matter how secure it is through this app. It's a vulnerability that would not exist if you had not installed this app. I don't keep it running all the time on all my machines, and there's only one machine that I even turn it on when I leave. Definitely worth playing around with. Again, it is pretty freaky when Like I have run macOS on this tiny, tiny little screen on this little like cigarette pack sized device, and oh my God, it's a scene, man. It's quite a scene, man.
That is funny, yeah. Wow, that must be hard to use. Hey, you mentioned before, Andy, folding keyboards. I which one do you use? I was just curious. I just got one, and I thought I'd make this a recommendation, but I don't want to overlap. This is
go ahead and recommend it. I've got a box labeled mobile keyboards that I've got.
Curious. This one is called is from iClever. It's $40, although if you want a touchpad, it's $10 more. It's backlit, which I really like. In fact, you can choose from red, green, or blue backlighting. And it works great with the iPad Pro, but any Bluetooth device. Look how small it is. It came in that little – it's small enough you could stick it in your briefcase. It unfolds to a pretty decent solid, frankly, better than the MacBook Pro keyboard that has some real travel. It has all the keys. The only negative on it is that the shift key is oddly on the right is oddly placed and tiny, and I keep hitting the page up instead of the shift key. But this is the iClever, and I think for $40, it's a handy thing to have if you use an iPad or an iPhone. Look at that. You got a whole box of them.
Yeah, I didn't lie because I tried to buy pretty much every keyboard that I could possibly find.
Is there much of a difference between them? This is the only one I've ever tried.
I would definitely say so. As a matter of fact, this is I think there is a company through Alibaba or whatever.
It looks like the iClever, exactly like the iClever.
Yeah, this is called the X Folding Triple. You can buy it.
Oh, but they don't make the same mistake with the shift key. They have swapped the shift key and the question mark key. And they've done it appropriately. What's the name of that one? I might have to buy that one instead.
They call this one the iNote.
iNote.
On the back, but it says X Folding Triple.
There's one company that makes all of these, obviously.
But I have to say that this is my – if you have to have something that folds in a shirt pocket, this is my favorite kind because the idea of having the central bed of it
– it's very solid. Yeah.
And it feels very, very good. It's small. It's about the size of your premium phone, so it works really great.
That is identical to the one I have, except they've just moved the keys around. That's all.
There was some controversy because a company on Kickstarter had a keyboard that was going to fold four times, almost like a folding stepladder. And they were unable to make their original design work for scale. And then they came out with something that was this. And then, again, it showed up on like Alibaba. So there's some controversy as to
whether anything.
I was unable to verify one way or another. It's possible. They said that they designed it and then these factories ripped it off, which is definitely possible in China. People who had waited years and years and years for this really delayed product that looked nothing like what they originally had funded were saying, maybe you just had someone put a sticker on something.
Right.
I don't know which one, but all I can say is I would. It's a distinction for me because if they did invent this technology, I would like to spend twice as much money and make sure that the real manufacturer gets it. Lacking any proof, this is too good a keyboard for me to say I refuse to use it until I know for sure this wasn't stolen technology. There might be an ethical problem with there. But again, I do not know what the story is. And I've been trying to find out about this. Yeah. But this is my favorite style of keyboard. Also, it really does look like a bridge if you look at it from the side. And that is like a suspension bridge sort of hinge. But so
very pretty. Well, there's a couple of choices for you. I can't find the iNote on Amazon. But I can only
they're going to be anywhere. And if anybody wants a good deal on second rate folding keyboards, I can help you. I can only ship about 20 orders of second rate folding keyboards.
Wow!
Remember this piece of work, the typo.
Oh, that was terrible. The Ashton Kutcher inspired design. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah. God, bless your heart for keeping the phone clicky keyboard going.
I can't
believe
you bought that. Well, I guess it's your job, isn't it?
Especially when it's something that looks like the dumbest thing you've ever seen in your life. I feel like I don't want to not be able to say this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And so my price of entry to be able to say this is the dumbest idea ever was to buy this and then actually use it for a few days and verify
the dumbest thing I've actually used.
Yeah, this is kind of the dumbest thing ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded this edition, this thrilling, gripping edition of MacBreak Weekly. thrilling and gripping because in 12 minutes, Apple's quarterly results will come out. And that's
where I'm heading.
And they keep doing that to us. Well, I'm glad Jim is there, and you can read his insights on loopinsight.com. Thank you, Jim Dalrymple, for joining us.
Thank you, Lou.
Always a pleasure to have you.
Always enjoy being here. Thank you.
Come back anytime. Don't hide any more apps in your beard. Just bring them to us or bands. Andy Iannacco is at the Chicago Sun-Times and makes his appearance here each week and in other places, too, including where are you living these days with your other shows?
Is it Relay FM? Relay FM. We do the Google show. If you're in Boston, I'm also going to be on Boston Public Radio again on Friday, probably talking about DEF CON and other cool stuff. I will make one prediction for the sales call for the analyst call. I predict that Apple will at least once and maybe even twice use the phrase "We love the Mac, and we've got wonderful things planned for it." But we have nothing more to say on this stuff.
Someday. We're still working on that Mac Pro. Remember, we had to go all the way back.
I have complete faith in our new communications director.
Hey, you know what? Wow. That might be a good job for the mooch.
Think about that.
Apple needs somebody who could tell it like it is. Also want to thank Adam Engst, tidbits.com, the world's best, longest running, and completely typed by hand, Macintosh.
No AI involved.
Yep.
And we will also have results from the call shortly after it's done.
I was glad we could get all of you off and so you could get a little snack before it all begins. The fun begins in about 10 minutes. The email goes out in 10 minutes and then the call is at about 40 minutes. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday right after iOS today. That's our new partner in crime here. So tune in at 9 a.m. Pacific for iOS today and then 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC for Mac Break Weekly. If you want to join us in the studio, email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. If you would like to watch the stream, it's on twit.tv/live. And when you are watching live, please join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You wouldn't want to miss the conversation going on there while the conversation's going on here. It's always a lot of fun. Let's see, what else? Oh, subscribe. You know, you can get the show audio and video downloads available at twit.tv/MBW. But if you subscribe, you'll get every episode kind of automatically in whatever it is you use to subscribe to podcasts. So please do. Thank you for being here. And now I'm sad to say it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.